Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, our second hour is now officially kicked off. It is Saturday, December 5th. I am James Edwards. I'm at AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station, which, thanks to the marvels of modern technology, is able to transmit our signal all the way over to Liberty News Radio headquarters in Utah, which also via satellite sends us out to their AM/FM affiliates. It is just, man, we're everywhere. We're everywhere now. We're on the internet. We're on satellite. We're in the car. We're on a computer. This is just, I don't know how it works. I couldn't begin to tell you how it all works. I just know I sit in front of this microphone and magic happens. And here, getting the other microphone now, filling in the seat that Keith Alexander just vacated, Winston Smith on this very cold December evening. Winston, how are you?
I'm very well, James. And you?
I am doing real good. It's a very fun, festive, spiritual time of year. We're heading towards Christmas, and it's nice and cold outside. I enjoy the cold because those brutally hot southern summers really beat us down. So I don't complain about the cold. Yeah, I mean, it is freezing cold, but I'm not complaining about it. I'm documenting that it is cold, but I'm not. Don't mistake that for lamentations or anything like that. I like it like this. I can bundle up. You just can't cool down in the summer. You can always bundle up enough in the winter. But all things considered, going pretty good, Winston, and it's good to have you back this week. As we mentioned in the last hour, Eddie Miller's on safari, Bill Rowland's at work, but they're going to get back in the saddle here sooner rather than later. Until then, I'm very thankful and blessed to have people like Keith and Winston on the staff too, helping us keep everything 5x5 here in the cesspool, and we'll see how good we can do over the course of the next 2 hours.
I hope so, too.
I think we'll do pretty good. We got a guest coming up, if all goes according to plan this hour, Mr. Andy Nowicki. He was last on with us. It's been over a year now, to be sure. He is author of the new book, Considering Suicide, which undoubtedly many of our people have as things continue to get bleaker and bleaker. Well, on some regards, and now and in others, there are a lot of reasons for hope. But nevertheless, Considering Suicide by Andy Nowicki is available now, courtesy of Amazon.com and other locations. He's going to be on to talk with us about his book and other things in the next segment, so about 15 minutes from now. We're looking forward to that. He is a contributor to The Last Ditch, a very popular online journal, among other things. So Andy Nowicki is going to be with us. He teaches college-level English, too, so I know that's something that's going to excite Winston, who is our literary master here in the cesspool. So y'all should have a lot to commiserate about.
I don't know about commiserate, but I think he and I are going to delve into certain applications of literary theory. I think we're going to be talking about movies and some of the not-too-subtle themes that we're seeing in film today. And from my perspective, the current crop of filmmakers is about the most unimaginative bunch that I can recall. We're seeing a plethora of remakes of older movies and sequels. There's very little originality coming out of Hollywood these days, and that's because the themes of Hollywood are so one-dimensional. They have one thing on their mind, and Hollywood has forgotten what a valuable tool for morality that film can be. You know, therein lies the problem. We have immoral people. We have an immoral race, or at least an amoral race, in charge of Hollywood these days. And the types of movies we're getting is proof of that.
Well, we're going to talk about all that and more, Winston, when Mr. Nowicki joins us in just a few minutes' time. So I'm looking forward to it. Going to be good to do this. We don't know where we're going to end up. That's the fun about live radio, especially with a show like this, which is completely unrehearsed. You never know where we're going to end up in the political cesspool. That's why each week is an adventure with us. So thank you for joining us on this odyssey, ladies and gentlemen. But before we go into all of those hot topics with Mr. Nowicki, our featured guest for the evening, I want to share with you something, just kind of a passing story. This would be one of those quirky, trivial stories that you see on I don't know, some sort of a news ticker. It's a serious story, but thankfully no one was hurt, so therefore it's just kind of a example of lessons you should learn. We don't advocate any sort of, well, I don't know what the word racism means. It means one thing Monday and another thing Tuesday and another thing Wednesday. It's either good or bad, depending on who's advocating it. But we do encourage realism. We want our listeners to be realistic when they go out into the world. And certainly if you apply the false doctrines and the tenets of political correctness, you're going to find yourself in a lot of trouble, as did this one store, which we blogged about at thepoliticalcesspool.org earlier in the week. And they deserved what they got in this instance. There was a story that we mentioned from a newspaper columnist, and it goes to show just how insane life in America is becoming. She has a friend, this journalist did, in her early 20s, who had just got hired as a retail worker in an upscale department store. You know how all of these stores are hiring seasonal employees for Christmas. During her training, this employee's training, it was stressed, as it is in all retail stores nowadays, that when looking for shoplifters, under no circumstances should she ever, quote-unquote, racially profile anyone at all. Now, her very first day on the job, ladies and gentlemen, according to this newspaper story, and again, we give you the documentation at our website, her first day on the job, she was working in the handbag area. Some of the purses the stores carry cost nearly $1,000, $1,000 for a purse. A young black male with baggy pants came in the store on her first day. She thought it was obvious that he couldn't afford a purse in that range, never mind the fact that, you know, why is a guy shopping for a purse anyway? But he was also checking the price tags, which led her to believe that he was looking for the most expensive ones to steal in order to resell them on the street. Now, this employee, keep in mind this was her first day on the job, she kept an eye on him but didn't call security because she didn't want to, quote-unquote, racially profile him, which might have cost her her new job. She soon went on break, the story continues, and another employee took over the area. The black male asked this replacement employee if the store had any gift boxes, and she said yes, and proceeded to go back into the back to get one. When she returned, the black guy was gone, and so were 9 Coach bags costing hundreds of dollars apiece. The young lady freely admits that if the guy had been white and dressed that way, she would have called security in a heartbeat, but because he was black, calling security would have been racially profiling, and she didn't want that on her conscience or her employment record. So once again, Winston, political correctness in action cost the store thousands of dollars, and they deserved it. Your thoughts?
Well, the young lady was right in her thinking. You know that had she confronted this thief, you know that if security had confronted this thief, that he would have claimed racism.
If she had done it preemptively.
After all, you wrote an article for the blog detailing how a woman, I think it was at a Walmart, she cut in line, and the store personnel tried to rectify the situation, and she claimed that the police used a racial epithet, right? So that's what they do, but that doesn't surprise me. What pains me, though, is that this young woman said that she did not want to have on her conscience the notion that she might have racially profiled, but her conscience felt no pang whatsoever about saying that she would have turned in a white guy. You know, she has been thoroughly trained to know or to think that if you bring about something negative to a black person, then it's automatically racism, and that's something on her conscience.
Isn't it interesting, though? And it would have been that case, I guarantee you. I mean, cultural Marxism ties both hands behind your back. If they had called, this guy was a proven thief. Obviously, he did go ahead, and her suspicions were right. It's funny what gut instincts can do for you. Follow your common sense, ladies and gentlemen, in all things, and you'll live safely, or more safely than if you believe the baloney of political correctness. But this guy obviously fit the profile. He did turn out to be a thief. But had she called security in, you know, 5 seconds before he stole the purses, I'm sure he would have sued and won, sued the store and won a lawsuit claiming he was the victim of racial profiling. You know, so literally the store was damned if they did, damned if they didn't. although their policy is just begging for stuff like this to happen. Either way, though, with the way political correctness has infiltrated and infested our society and our psyche, I don't know. I mean, the guy's a thief, but if they'd have called security before the fact and asked him a few questions, he would have cried racism and probably, you know, gotten even more out of the store than the thousands of dollars worth of merchandise he's swiped. So I don't know. Either way, having a policy like that, it doesn't pain me whatsoever that the store got swindled. Winston?
Oh, I didn't hear you stop.
I did stop. But anyway, we got to take a break, so that's good enough. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
You know, there's a lot of things about this show that I'm very proud of. It's always very exciting and instills a sense of pride in you to be able to bring on the big names that everyone knows and have interviews with people like Pat Buchanan and Nick Griffin. But the thing that this show is really here to do, one of many things this show is here to do, is to bring to your attention the men and women of our movement that you should know. And one of those people, without a doubt, is Andy Nowicki. This is a guy who does a great deal of work. He provides tangible fruit. He makes a positive difference. And he does so as we all do, at his own expense, as a volunteer. And he's producing the kind of positive impact that we want our listeners to replicate. And that being said, Andy Nowicki is a self-identified Catholic reactionary, as he writes, who loathes all modernist dogmas and superstitions. He is the author of Considering Suicide, which is now newly available from ninebandedbooks.com and Amazon. He is also the author of the 2002 release, The Psychology of Liberalism. Mr. Nowicki is a regular contributor to the online journal, The Last Ditch. Very good reading there, ladies and gentlemen. His work has also appeared in the New Oxford Review and, of course, American Renaissance. He has two children, one wife, and teaches college-level English for fun. Andy Nowicki, everybody. Andy, welcome back to the show.
For fun and profit.
For fun and profit.
Yes.
Yeah, I did leave off the last two words, didn't I? Perhaps the most important.
Yes, and I take it you're saying I'm not a celebrity right now with that introduction.
Well, we're going to change that tonight. I'm just saying. Well, you're certainly probably bigger celebrities than some of us, but nevertheless. I said all that in the most complimentary way I could.
Yes, I understand. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate
it. No, absolutely, Andy. It's been too long, and I appreciate your willingness to accept the interview request, and it's great to have you on tonight. I understand that you and Winston talked in advance of the program this evening, and he has a lot lined up for you, so I'm not going to waste yours or his time. I'm going to turn it right over to Winston to get this thing started. Winston, take it away.
Thank you very much, James, and let me say it's very good to have you out of my way for a little bit.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, Whitney, what a pleasure it is to get to talk with you again.
Yes, good to talk with you.
Had a very fine discussion before the show about things related to the show and things not related to the show. But, you know, when you're like we are, Mr. Nowicki, it's hard to separate what we're doing now from everything else.
Your life is your work.
What do you think of that?
Yes. Well, yeah, like I was saying, your life is your work, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a sense.
Well, let's dive right into your book, okay?
Sure.
It's called Considering Suicide, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And let's just start off with the basics. What is it about?
Well, there are a lot of different ways I could answer that question, because it's not your typical book. And I first have to say it's not put out by your typical publisher either. The company that that published Considering Suicide, which is now available on Amazon, as y'all were saying a minute ago, and from the publisher. This is Nine Banded Books, which is also put out various other, let's say, edgy and offbeat fare, such as Bradley Smith, who you guys probably know about, and some of your listeners probably do as well, and L.A. Rollins and others. So it's published by Nine Banded Books out of Charleston, West Virginia, a very small but very relevant and useful publishing company, company that needs to exist, and thank God it does. So my book, the approach that I'll take to talking about it here is just to say what really informed this book is the crisis in the West, the spiritual crisis in the Western world, that crisis that's now upon us. And like I was saying to you a few minutes ago, a lot of the things that are talked about on your show are political issues and, you know, evidence of political problems, political crisis. Sometimes you talk about moral, social issues. But, of course, underlying all those issues is the spiritual matter, the spiritual issue. And this book is, in its way, an examination of the current state of spiritual decline in the West. It's in two parts. The first part is written from the point of view of a man who is considering killing himself, and it's his diary that he's keeping as he's going through this period of time, and he's reflecting upon various things in his life and also various things in the culture that surrounds him and in society. What it boils down to for him is, again, this crisis of faith. So that's the first part. The second part is more written from the point of view of sort of a scholarly man who is just looking objectively at the current state of the West and the decline of faith, what you could call the decentering of the church, of Christianity in the Western world, and the effects that it's had, the debilitating spiritual effects that it's had, and as a result, the actual tangible effects that it's had in as far as the things you've talked about on this show, demographic wise, and decline in morality wise, and all sorts of things becoming acceptable that would never have been dreamed about by anybody in their most fevered imagination, you know, just 20, 30, 40 years ago. So the book is in two parts, and it takes a sort of roundabout approach. Like I said, it's an unusual book published by an unusual publisher, but I think the real underlying thing, what it's really addressing, is the spiritual crisis in the West. Specifically, Christianity was once the animating faith of the Western world, and in the last, it's up for debate, I guess, how long the decline has been, how long when to chart the beginning of the decline. But the fact of the decline, really can't be debated, I don't think. But in any case, Christianity was once at the center of, or faith in general was once at the center of Western life. Now it is not. Now it's very much shoved to the side, and people pay lip service to it occasionally on Sundays, but then pretty much go and live their lives the way they feel like living their lives. And it's a terrible thing. It's led to a real crisis, a spiritual crisis that is very genuine and has also contributed to a great deal of chaos of all different kinds in our society.
Well, there's certainly a domino effect that has presented itself as a result of the spiritual decline, and I know everyone listening here tonight perhaps doesn't share our faith, and that's
right.
That's okay, but at the same time, it would certainly, I think, be to their detriment to disagree with the fact that the fall of Christianity has also precipitated the fall in our culture and a lot of the things that made America great. But we're going to talk about exactly why the spiritual decline of the West is so important and why it was such a focal point of this book. When we continue, we've got to take a time out here, pay the bills. But when we come back from this commercial break, we'll continue on with Andy Nowicki, our featured
Don't
guest of the night.
Away.
Stay tuned.
Political Cesspool Guys, we'll be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Part of what makes me such a great radio host is that I know when to talk, I know when to listen, and I know when to get out of the way. You heard in the last segment, Andy Nowicki opened up the segment as we discussed his book a little bit. We're going to dive into the content of that book a little bit more and then move on to other matters with our featured guest for the evening. And to help me do that, Winston Smith. Winston, please, it's all yours. Take it away.
Thank you very much, James. Mr. Nowicki, I'm getting a bad echo in the headphones here. Mr. Nowicki, you mentioned in the first part that your book, Considering Suicide, is about the spiritual decline in the West. And upon that, we agree perfectly. It is incontrovertible that spirituality is in decline in the West, and that decline has led to the ills that we are now experiencing. Mm-hmm. I happen to believe that every decision, every thought, every action is theological in nature, in that it reveals the place of God in your life. But continuing on with your thought, what are some signs, what are some symptoms that you see of this spiritual decline?
Well, you know, if I could get pedantic for a moment, there's three main reasons I think that we could say that man is a spiritual animal at his essence. And when these things, you know, when he doesn't have when he doesn't have faith, when he doesn't have a belief in a transcendent order, in his life, or in or in the world, or operating in the world, or what have you, there's three reasons why I think faith is needed, why man needs faith. The first reason is a psychological reason. Have a sense of purpose, or we need a sense of purpose. This is something that Viktor Frankl wrote about and others, Man's Search for Meaning. We need a sense of purpose in our lives, not just a relativistic sense of purpose of, you know, well, whatever works for you is fine. We want something, that speaks from beyond this world, beyond this realm. Okay, so there's a psychological reason why faith is needed. There's a sociological reason, which is to say society can't function without a faith, without a belief in some transcendent realm, some transcendent order. And we see that today. You ask for signs and symptoms. With the moral decline of our time. Mostly centered around sexual behavior. Rise in promiscuity, rise in divorce, abortion. Increasingly permissive culture. These symptoms are there because of the vacuum that's been left by faith, and it's not just sexual issues. It can apply to to other things too, like, you know, the people who kill just because they feel like it, or you know, do whatever commit whatever evil wicked acts they commit just because, you know, why not, if there's, you know, if there's no God, if there's no transcendent order, if there's no absolute right or wrong. So there's the psychological reason, the sociological reason, and finally the logical reason, which is that life just simply does not make sense without faith. You know, without, you know, I'm a Catholic, and you know, the Catholic tradition is the comfortable balance between faith and reason, that you come to understand reason in the light of faith. And when you don't have faith, the world just becomes an endless parade of the absurd and the obscene. And what's more, in the absence of faith, you know, people think that too much faith leads to bad things. You know, if there's too many people who are too religious, that leads to tyranny. But in fact, it's the absence of faith that tends to lead to tyranny, and we see that with political correctness today. You know, it's just so ridiculous, and I know everybody listening to me agrees. But it's so ridiculous that you have people say, on the one hand, there is no truth, there's no right or wrong, you know, to say otherwise is just arrogant. And then they turn on a dime and say, but you shouldn't be racist, you shouldn't be sexist, you shouldn't be homophobic, or whatever, you know, whatever words they want to use.
Their argument that there is no absolute is negated as soon as they say there is no absolute truth.
Right.
And if they say that, then there is at least one absolute truth, and that is that there is no absolute truth. It is a self-negating
right.
assertion.
Yes. Yes, and if there's no absolute truth, you know, if it's all relative, then why should we listen to them when they lecture us on the way we should live our lives and the kind of words that we are not allowed to use, otherwise we'll get fired from our jobs, and, you know, the kind of phrases, the way that it's polite to put things, like you can't say gang rape anymore in England, I hear.
Yeah.
You know, just all the ridiculous, you know, twists and turns of the politically correct movement. This I would say is a direct result of the vacuum left by faith.
I have a story here that just was published, I think, a half an hour ago, and it's another symptom of the decline of spirituality in the West. And the story is titled Second Gay Bishop for Episcopal Church, Anglicans.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the Episcopal Diocese of Los Angeles has elected a lesbian as assistant bishop, Dave. And it's the second openly gay bishop in the Global Anglican Fellowship, which is already deeply fractured over the first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a symptom, but the underlying cause is that people have rejected spirituality and have accepted social norms.
Yeah,
whatever the dogma of the day. In Protestantism, we would call this the Corinthianizing of the church. They have taken a sexual deviant and elevated her to a leadership position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they say we're the tolerant ones, right? And this is what really gets me. They say we believe these things because we're open, we're tolerant. But then if you disagree with them, if you say this is a problem for me because I don't think that that, you know, it's not that I hate homosexuals, but I don't think homosexuality is the way our you know that God created us, that it's not against, it's not with the divine plan. If you say that, you're instantly held up for spite and ridicule, and they're quite ruthless and hateful against you, and yet you on the other hand, there's no right or wrong. So, but they come down on you like a ton of bricks if you disagree with them, and you know, that's the sort of, it's the crisis in the Anglican Communion, and it's the crisis, you know, all over the place. We see that happening. These so-called tolerant people, these liberals, whose claim to fame is how tolerant they are, but if you go against them, then you are the worst. A human being that you know, you're subhuman. You're the worst thing that ever has lived. I mean, you're Hitler. It's quite appalling.
Well, they're the embodiment. They're the personification of something that occurred in our man George Orwell's book, 1984, mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. Daily 3 Minutes of Hate. And mm-hmm. If you've read the book, you know that every day the poor people of Airstrip 1 are required to participate in a pep rally for hate, if you will, and which is directed by the Ministry of Love.
A pep rally for hate. That's a good way of putting it.
It's a film of the enemy. His name is Emmanuel Goldstein.
Mm-hmm.
And these people start chanting, "We hate hate. We hate hate." And that's what the cultural Marxists and the political correctionists, that's what they're like.
And
they're tolerant of everything except
right.
And they're
Orwell,
tolerant of everything except what they disagree with.
Yeah, and he said he was the one who had the freedom is slavery. What were the three slogans?
Freedom is slavery.
Ignorance is strength.
Ignorance is strength.
You know the.
I should know what the third one is, but I don't.
But someone anyway, named Winston Smith not
the
knowing the three
issue. It's the cognitive dissonance that I'm basically getting at here.
Hey, Mr. Yes. Nowicki, Winston, take. Time out, guys. We got 10 seconds to break. I am finding myself as enthralled as I hope that the audience is. But we do have to take a time out here. We're going to take another break, and we're going to come back with one final segment this evening with Andy Nowicki before we head into tonight's third hour. I don't know if 45 minutes is going to be enough. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards here with you this evening, Saturday, December 5th, 1380 a.m., WLRM Radio. That's where Winston Smith and I are sitting right now as we broadcast across the country to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. We've got one more segment here with Mr. Andy Nowicki, our featured guest of the evening. His book is out now on Amazon.com and NineBandedBooks.com. The title of it is Considering Suicide. We've been talking about that and other matters for the last little bit here in tonight's broadcast. In preparing for this interview with Mr. Nowicki, he suggested a variety of very good topics, all of which I wanted to have time to cover tonight. As it always does, time is fleeting. Andy, we're just going to have you back soon, much sooner than it was since your last appearance, if that's all right with you. But
absolutely.
But before the time is out tonight, we still got a few minutes here. And with that being said, I'm going to toss it back over to Winston to continue the interview. Winston.
Thank you, James. And maybe we could consider holding Mr. Nowicki over into the next hour. Of course, that's up to you, being the head honcho, the big cheese, the top dog, the man, the El Perro Grande.
I am very flexible.
Okay. Well, let's continue with Mr. Nowicki. Mr. Nowicki, we were talking about some of the symptoms of the decline of the West and how we agree that the decline is essentially a spiritual decline, and it has manifested itself psychologically and sociologically. And I'd like to touch upon some street level of the decline of the West as caused by a decline in spirituality. And I know that one aspect of culture that you are involved with is film,
mm-hmm.
movies.
Good
segue. We at the Political Cesspool are great fans of film. In fact, we've had on our show Mr. Merlin Miller from Americana Pictures, who hopes to return American film to what it once was, and when it was wholesome and good and uplifting. But you've written a review of a movie, the newest Quentin Tarantino movie. I can't remember the name of it.
Can I say it on the
Inglourious
air?
Inglourious Bastards.
Yes.
Apparently
and,
so.
wonderful spelling there.
Yes.
But I think that Inglorious Bastards is really indicative of the decline of both the spirituality of the West and of film, because if you look at some of the subtle message in it, it's really an admission that Hollywood has become owned and operated by Jews. And I won't go into all the details of why I think that, but
I gotta say this. Well, it goes without saying, and they admit this in their own publications, that they do, you know, pretty much run Hollywood. They're heads of all the major studios. But we had Dr. Greg Johnson on of the Occidental Quarterly to talk about this movie, and I'm sure with some of the sentiments, Mr. Nowicki would agree with Dr. Johnson. But there are some other ideas, or I guess subliminal messages that this movie, in your opinion, Mr. Nowicki, tries to bring about that perhaps even we could agree with. Now, give us your assessment of it.
Well, yeah, I hadn't thought of the way you were talking about it. Obviously, it is about Jews and Nazis, and you know, everybody who's seen the previews knows that. But I think that it's Quentin Tarantino, love him or hate him, he's a skilled filmmaker, and I would say there's have either of you seen it, by the way?
No, I have not seen it. Not because I was boycotting it necessarily, just haven't gotten around to it. And I do see a lot of movies.
Yes. Well, it's actually got, it's one of those interesting movies that works on a couple of different levels. On one hand, I think you could definitely say that it's a Jewish fantasy a wartime fantasy where this gang of this squadron of mostly Jews, although they're led by just a southern guy, Aldo Raines, played by Brad Pitt, who's not Jewish, but the squadron is mostly made up of Jews, and they end up killing off the Nazi hierarchy in an ahistorical way. But in any case, so on one level, you know, you could see it as the typical anti-Nazi movie, and you know, I'm not a fan of the Nazis either, but I do think there is some lack of balance in the way that, you know, the enemy is almost always the Nazis, as opposed to there have been plenty of other equally, if not more, murderous ideologies of the 20th century that have not been portrayed as negatively, and sometimes have been even portrayed positively.
Well, Stalin's Russia, for instance, or the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, like communism.
Bolshevism, right. Soviet communism and Bolshevism in general, those were Jew movements. Those were owned, operated, carried out, and funded by Jews.
Well, that's true.
In the movie, I think what's interesting about the movie is, on one level, it's just what you expect it is from the preview. But on the other hand, there are a couple of scenes that really subtly indict the viewer for dehumanizing the Germans. There's a scene where the Inglorious Bastards, the squadron, they threaten to kill this one German captain whom they've held captive unless he tells them some secrets, and he refuses to do it. So they get out this one guy called the Bear Jew, and that's his actual that's his actual nickname in the movie, who beats him to death with a baseball bat. But the thing is, in that scene, that you can't help but admire the German captain for the way that he absolutely has this courage, this integrity, and he does not budge. He just glowers at the enemy coldly before he gets beaten to death. And that scene, and others like it, there's a scene near the end, just when the massacre of the Nazi hierarchy and some other people happens, that I think is very interesting in the way that it frames what's going on, because I don't know if I can explain it all right now, but because it is kind of complicated in the way that the film works, but it indicts the viewer in a way that I don't think you would necessarily think is happening. And indeed, you know, the Allies did commit a lot of atrocities during World War II, and firebombing cities, killing civilians, you know, And even if you think that ending Nazism was a worthwhile goal, I don't think it can be denied that it was carried out in a way that was in many ways evil, and also that one of the main beneficiaries of this evil was an arguably even worse evil, which is the Soviet Union, Stalin's Russia.
That's a very interesting assessment of the movie. Now, after having two intellectual heavyweights like yourself and Dr. Johnson opining on this movie here on the program, I guess I've got to go see it if for no other reason than that. And you've documented this. I believe you've written a review for The Last Ditch. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, the Last Ditch. I should also mention them. www.thornwalker.com/ditch, or you could just Google The Last Ditch. It's a very good, and I don't just say them because they publish my stuff, but they publish a lot of hard-hitting, politically incorrect, edgy, dangerous, thought criminalistic material, and my stuff is just among them, among what can be, can go
well, since
into
we're
that
talking about category. Movies, there's one movie in particular I'd like to discuss, and you can see it by going to Last Ditch and clicking on Mr. Nowicki's name, and I'd like to ask him about that.
Mm-hmm.
You starred in a movie, haven't you, called Success is for Losers.
Well, success. I'm glad you asked me about that, because Success is for Losers is this. It's actually this project by a friend of mine, who his real name is Christopher Snell, but he goes under the pseudonym of Vim Vigorous, and he's got this online series, this sort of homemade series, homemade reality show, a low-budget reality show called Successes for Losers. And I've appeared in some of the episodes, and there was one that I think you're referring to that took place in a mall. We were just, our intention was just to sort of present the book, considering suicide, and because some of the narrative discusses the mall and what a mall represents in our society today and so forth, but we ended up running afoul of the mall authorities, and it made for some very interesting a very interesting segment.
Well, Andy and Winston, once again, the imprisonment of commercial radio has once again restricted us. We've got to go to another break. Andy, of course, Winston mentioned a few moments ago, if you'd like to stay with us just for a couple of more minutes to cap off the interview at the top of the third hour, you're more than welcome. I don't know what your time allows.
Sure, that'd be great.
We got about 6 minutes of national news that they play at the top of each hour. So sit tight, everyone. We're going to bring back Andy and go into the third hour and final hour of tonight's program right after this. Stay tuned. The Political Cesspool.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the rise.